Well, hello everyone and welcome to the December 2014 podcast. Great to have you all along. If you're like me, you're sort of girding your loins at this point, as it were, for the plethora, hopefully, of shows which are coming up in the month of December. Every year I sort of hold my breath slightly because in the old days, well, let's say 10 years ago, come the end of September, I was pretty much fully booked for December. But these days, things seem to come in a lot later. And although most of the work that I do these days is close-up rather than children, so perhaps there's a slightly different sort of timing on when bookings come in, nevertheless, I do find that it's not now until November that December really starts to fill up properly. But nevertheless, every year I sort of go into a minor frenzy of hoping that I'm going to get loads of bookings and doing all the admin for booking them in, as it were. And then the sort of realization dawns, I'm actually going to have to go out and do all those shows. You know, it's a funny sort of thing. And once you get into December, and I find I sort of get my head down and go into doing all the shows and then come out blinking into the sunlight, as it were, around Christmas Day. And often the month goes very, very fast. And it's a very sort of surreal month. Everybody around me is doing their own personal Christmas preparations. And I seem to be attending everybody else's Christmas parties without the first or any thought at all, in fact, for my own. It's a good job I've got a wife who's very, very good at sorting out the Christmas stuff. She knows that I'm just basically not going to be around very much in December, which is a big help that she understands that. I really appreciate that. But of course, every time you come up to doing all these shows, it makes December a very unique month, doesn't it? Because most months you don't get the number of shows that you get in the festive period. And I think sometimes that brings into sharp relief quite a number of sort of little issues, things that you don't normally have to think about, advanced preparations that perhaps you wouldn't normally have to do. For instance, you sort of look at the props that you're going to be using in the shows that you do, and you think, are there any consumables that are likely to run out during the Christmas period? Because with the Christmas post, if you have to order something at the last minute, it may well be that it'll get delayed and you won't get it in time. Props which are getting a bit tired, which might break because you use them a lot. Things like, I don't know, rope. Is it getting tatty? Do you have more rope? If you do the cut and restore rope a lot, where you use a little bit of rope every time, will you have enough to last you through the Christmas period? It's little things like this, I think, that advanced preparation can help to alleviate any problems, because the last thing you want to do is to have to significantly change your act or leave out tricks which you love to do simply because you haven't got the raw materials to actually use to perform them. And then there are other things too, like have I had my suit dry cleaned, for instance? Does it need a dry clean before I go into the period? It's no good suddenly deciding, oh, it's looking a bit mucky, or I've sweated too often in this suit. You know, these things, get that done before the period starts. I have to try and tell myself to do that. Look at the car. Does it need a service? Is it going to be okay, hopefully, to get you through all the travelling maybe that is going to be necessary over December? So, and then just, I suppose, in a way, personal health, getting enough sleep, if at all possible, because a lot of the close-up stuff happens late at night, of course. But well, that's fine if you have several nights in a row where you're out working, but not so fine if you're then having to do a children's show first thing the next morning. It can be extremely tiring. So how are you feeling in yourself? Have you had your flu jab? So many things that you could think about leading up to Christmas. But whether you've done your advanced preparations or not, if you're likely to be busy this December, I hope you have a really successful run of shows, that the weather is kind to us all and we don't get any snow or any really bad weather conditions to prevent us from getting to the shows. And because, I mean, that is something too, isn't it? We can make all the preparations in the world for ourselves, but what's going to happen if the weather is really bad? Normally we don't get too bad weather, or at least not weather that's so bad that we can't get to an event. But even worse, I think sometimes, is if you can get to the event, but people who are coming to the event can't get to it. So you end up with very low numbers, or they cancel at the last minute. Horrendous. Anyway, let's hope none of that happens, and I wish you a very successful and busy Christmas period. Now, talking about shows leads me to reflect on publicity for shows. I've talked before about the number of different avenues that we entertainers have these days for getting our message out there. Everything from lots of internet opportunities, of course, but also offline advertising possibilities as well. And one of the things that I think is really quite important to do, and I try to do this as much as I can, is to track where the inquiries that come through are actually coming from. Because I think sometimes you can fool yourself into thinking that one particular avenue, let's say Google AdWords, let's say if you have a Google AdWords campaign running and you're spending a certain amount of money on that, you would like, naturally enough, to think that, well, the money that I'm spending is generating plenty of work. But it may not be that it is. And unless you track where most of the inquiries are coming from, you're not actually going to be able to decide whether it's money well spent or not. I think also it's quite difficult to get that tracking information. I mean, you can have, if you get a lot of inquiries on the telephone, which used to be the way, of course, probably I'd say 90% of all my inquiries used to come on the telephone. Now, 90-95% comes through the internet, or sort of arriving as an email or an online form. But in the old days, when the telephone, if you had call tracking numbers, then that gave you a printout so that you could see exactly how many show inquiries had come through on a particular number. You could use a specific number on your advertising, and then that would be able to tell you exactly how many inquiries were coming through. But of course, with the internet, it's slightly trickier. Now, on my website, on the sort of the website that I use for shows, I have an online application form that anybody wanting to make a show inquiry needs to fill out, so that I get all the information so that I can give an accurate quote. And one of the things which is on there at the bottom is a list of the various most common places that I use for advertising. And I ask people to tell me which one they have actually used to find me. And I often find that people just tick the Google box, you know, a Google search, which is fine. But of course, it may be that they've seen me on another website and they just put Google because Google has come to indicate basically the internet. So that's a bit tricky. So what I'm saying is that I think that sometimes the statistics can be a little bit, distorted by the way that people actually tell you where they've got your number or your details from. But certainly in principle, getting an idea, for instance, with a printed advert, whether it's generated any inquiries or not, I think is a good thing. Although I do think that with the printed, say, magazines, I advertise in local magazines for my shows, and I generally find that's quite good. But often what happens is people will see the advert, they see it on a number of occasions when it comes in the magazine they happen to be reading, and then when they finally want a magician, they then go onto the internet, and then they recognise your name. So then when they tell you, how did you find me, they say Google. But actually, it could well be that it came originally, the awareness, if you like, of me and the fact that I do shows has come from the printed magazine, which they happen to be reading. So statistics need to be taken slightly with a pinch of salt. But nevertheless, if you want to make sure that your advertising budget is being spent in the best possible way, then trying to get some sort of a check on where the money is going and what it's generating is obviously a really good thing to do. I noticed recently on Magic Week an announcement that Bobby Bernard had sadly passed away. Bobby was one of Magic's characters, which is often a polite way for saying that he was difficult. And indeed, Bobby was a difficult person in many ways because he delighted in giving people advice about how they could improve their magic, whether they wanted the advice or not. Some people didn't like this and felt that he was interfering and was way too aggressive in the way that he expressed his opinion. But the fact of the matter was that Bobby had a huge amount of knowledge and a very keen eye for what made a good performance. And he combined that with a willingness, indeed, he saw it, I think, as his mission in life, particularly with younger performers, to try and pass on the information about things that he'd seen and observations that he wanted to make. I can remember when I was probably in my 20s, I first came across Bobby. And so at the time when I was entering magic competitions, so I had quite a high profile at that time. And Bobby loved to come up to me and tell me what I was doing wrong and tell me how I could improve things. And in a way, it was quite scary because he was so assertive. But underneath it all, I think his heart was in the right place. I mean, he genuinely could see things that he felt could be easily remedied. And he seemed to be desperate to pass that information on so that the person involved could put things into place that would make their act improve. So, yes, he definitely was one of life's characters, one of magic's big characters. And I'm sorry that he's passed on. But I'm sure there are many performers out today still working who, a bit like me really, have benefited from his advice and his input. Have you ever wondered what it is that makes some tricks so memorable and others so instantly forgettable? I mean, I've noticed that when I'm out performing, often people would like to talk to me about Dynamo. I mean, he's the current big thing on TV. And I think his live shows, which are coming up, will also do a lot to even raise his profile even further, perhaps. But whenever they talk to me about the tricks that he's done and how amazing they all are, it seems that quite often the same tricks get mentioned. It's almost as if some leave an impression where others haven't. Now, bearing in mind that he's had several series on TV, and then in each of those series, he's done a lot of magic. It's interesting, isn't it, that certain tricks stick in the public's mind. One of the tricks that gets mentioned probably more than any of the others, I think it probably came from the first series as well, so quite a while ago now, is the one where he put a mobile phone into a bottle. Now, why this would be one that they remember as opposed to anything else, I don't really know, other than the fact that, A, of course, it's totally impossible, B, it uses what people perceive to be totally ordinary items, and thirdly, that you can describe the plot in a very few words. He put a mobile phone into a bottle. That tells you everything you need to know about that magic trick. It describes something totally impossible using objects that everybody can readily identify with. And I suppose that's it, isn't it? That is what makes some tricks really memorable. It's the fact that they are easy to describe, that you can place almost in somebody else's mind an image of the magic trick in very, very few words. My ring disappeared and ended up in his key case. You know, it's that type of thing. Whereas more convoluted or complicated tricks, while they obviously have impact, and some of them are hugely baffling, they don't tend to stick in people's minds perhaps so much, because they can't be described readily or easily, particularly to somebody who wasn't actually there at the time. You can imagine some of the mental effects. I mean, somebody might say to somebody else, oh, you know, Derren Brown was amazing. He can read people's minds. But what the actual trick was, or what the actual effect was that he did to create the impression that he can read people's minds, most people would probably not be able to remember. So I often think with this sort of thing that if you're looking to include new items in your act, try and you want those things to be memorable, try and find tricks which are, if not in themselves, simple, but nevertheless can be described in a few words. You know, a signed card keeps jumping to the top of the pack. You know, a lot of the classic tricks, steel rings link and unlink, a lot of the classic tricks in magic are simple to describe, and maybe that is why they become memorable, because people can assimilate the information easily about what has happened and can then pass it on to other people. I don't know if it happens to you, but every year somebody will say to me, so Mark, what do you want for Christmas? And although I must, throughout the course of the year, buy all sorts of things which would make excellent presents, as soon as it gets to the month of December and somebody actually asks me what I want, I can't think of a single thing. It's extraordinary, as if my mind goes completely blank. Now, if you're in this situation and you think, oh, I'd like something magic related, then why not get one of my gift vouchers? Because the gift vouchers allow you to, perhaps not in December, maybe in January when Christmas is over, they will allow you to browse through the supplied CD Illustrated catalogue and at your leisure select things that you would like to have and therefore make an informed choice. The gift vouchers I supply, they come in a nice little simple gift card and they can be bought in any multiple of £10. So it can be 10, 20, 30, 40, whatever. We do sell quite a few of these at Christmas time, and certain people seem to get one of my gift vouchers every year, which is quite funny and rather nice too, I think. So I hope that they enjoy spending them, and you can do that too. So if somebody's going to ask you, what do you want for Christmas, then maybe you should think about getting one of the Mark Leverage Magic gift vouchers. Last month I posed a question on my Facebook page about how you prevent the last table or the last couple of tables that you do at a dinner function, getting the impression that you've been ignoring them all evening because you've come to them so late in the event. I mean, it's inevitable, isn't it? If you've got a lot of tables to do, some tables are going to be last. It's an inescapable fact. And yet it's funny, it kind of bothers me slightly because you arrive at the table and they sort of look at you, and sometimes people say, oh, coming to us now, are you? In that sort of tone of voice that kind of telling you off, or run out of other tables, had to come to us now, we thought you were ignoring us, all this sort of thing. And although it's very easy just to make a joke out of it and say, you know, well, one of the lines that I actually use is to say, well, no, you know what they say, you should always save the best till last. And then I pause slightly and then I point to another table and then I say, so I'm going over there in a minute. But just before I do, let me entertain you. But so there are things that you can say. But I wondered whether anybody else has come up with a good way of preventing the audience from feeling like this in the first place. Because I think it depends on the event as well. If you go to a very big event where there's lots of different things happening, lots of entertainment and speeches and all the rest of it, the fact that the magician hasn't arrived at the table is probably not going to be so noticeable. But if it's quite a large event, let's say 15 tables, but it's not absolutely huge, then it still could be quite a long time before you, from when you did your first table to when you can finally get to your last table, and that table may feel a little bit miffed, especially because, and this obviously would depend on how you work tables, but I tend to dot around. I will go to different tables in different parts of the room. I don't do them systematically. And this is for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which is that I like to perform when people are not eating. And it may well be that after I finish one table, the table next to it, the people are still eating and I can't go to them. So I have to go somewhere else. So in that sense, there are reasons why you might keep walking past the table and apparently ignoring them. And then, of course, eventually you come to them late. Now, the issue here also is that I don't know at any given point, most of the time, which table I'm going to end up doing last because of, well, one of the reasons I've just mentioned about the speed of when they're served, cleared, when they're eating, when they're not, when everybody is at the table. You know, you can't go and entertain a table perhaps if three of the people have gone to the toilet or out having a cigarette break. So I like to wait until most of the people are there if I possibly can. So from that point of view, there are all sorts of reasons why I may walk past it. So I can't even sort of tell a table that they're going to be last. Because I don't know whether they're going to be last. Anyway, it was interesting when I put the thing on the face, it got a huge number of views, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, and loads of people put their two penneth worth in to tell me what they do. Everything from sort of quite funny lines to advice such as, well, quite frankly, you know, it's only entertainment, they need, the people at the table need to learn to live with the disappointment. One of the things that you can do, of course, and I have done this occasionally, is that if you're working one table and you know that you're not going to go to the next table immediately, but you can see them looking over at you, sort of in almost in anticipation, one of the things that I've done is to when I finish the previous table, because I can't go to I will go up to the table and I'll say, hi everybody, listen, I won't entertain you now because I can see you're still eating. I will be back later. I haven't forgotten you. Don't worry, I will come see you later. So then if I don't come to them until quite a bit later, it doesn't really matter because at least I've made contact with them. They know that I'm not ignoring them. And then they're not so likely to take affront of the fact that I've left them till last. So anyway, it's interesting, isn't it? These little things that can happen sometimes. Let's say it's not a big issue because it doesn't happen all the time. But it was just something I wonder whether others had any ways round it. And if you go to my Facebook page, you can have a look at all the many replies that I received. I've just finished writing one of the articles for the next issue of Magic Scene. That's the January one that will be out at the end of December. And I think it's come out as a really interesting article because we're talking about the issue of performance nerves or stage fright. It's true to say, isn't it, that some people are very much debilitated by their nerves when they perform. You can tell when they're actually performing. Their hands are shaking, they're sweating, their throat is very dry, and they clearly are ill at ease. And yet they're making themselves go through this, what appears to be torment, in order to try and perform magic. And of course, it's readily recognised, I guess, that the more nervous you are, the worse your performance is likely to be. Interestingly, I think we all need a certain amount of sort of nerves, if that's the right word. We all need to be keyed up to a certain extent, I think, in order to deliver in terms of a performance. It's all too easy to be, if you are extremely relaxed, to be so laid back that there's no dynamism to your performance. Maybe that's not a good thing either, although it may work for some people. But for most of us, we do get a little bit keyed up. But usually, those of us who have control over the tension that performance brings can control it to the point where once we actually start the show, all nerves basically just disappear. So the idea of the article is to look at, A, what causes people to be nervous, and then B, what can you do if you are somebody who's a bit nervous, what you can do to help prevent it. I mean, I think it's a real pity that there are some people who, in sort of practice mode, if you like, or when they are relaxed, can entertain really, really well. They can do technically very difficult stuff. And yet, as soon as they get in front of a proper audience, if you like, the tension of the situation seems to make it so stressful for them that they can no longer achieve the sleights or the moves that they actually need to do to perform the tricks. So it is something that is very important to get to get control of, really, if you want to be able to perform well. So we got the advice of a number of experienced professionals, all of whom have been performing for many years, and the answers that they gave have been incorporated into the article. I think it's a really interesting article. So if you've ever wondered about how to control nerves, then get a hold of the issue number 60 of Magic Scene, which will be out, I say, at the end of December, the January issue, and I think you'll find the article very helpful. Funny thing happened 2 or 3 months back. I got a phone call on my mobile phone from somebody inquiring about a magic show. And it was a children's party, in fact. Now, there were two slightly odd things about this. The first was that it came on the telephone, because as I've mentioned earlier, most of my inquiries these days come through the internet. Second thing, that it was to my mobile phone and not my landline. Some of my publicity does have my mobile phone on it, but I encourage people to use my landline because the quality of the line is better. In my house, we have very thick walls, and so the reception on my mobile phone is not that great in certain parts of the house. So I prefer people to ring me on a landline if at all possible. Anyway, so we went through all this, and this woman said, well, I said, oh, you know, where did you get my information from? She said, oh, I got you off the internet. She said, I had a look at your website, and we went through all the details of the show, and eventually we went through how many children there were going to be, how long it might last, what I could do, and then I said, whereabouts are you? She said, Enfield. I said, Enfield? She said, yeah. I said, right, well, I'm in Exeter in Devon. Oh, are you? I said, yes, I am. I said, I'm quite happy to drive the 3+ hours up to entertain if you really want me to. But quite frankly, it's going to put a huge premium on the price because of the 6 hours of driving involved. You really might want to think about getting somebody local to you because there are an awful lot of children's entertainers in your area, I'm sure. And so I didn't do the booking, of course. But it was I never occurred to me when I had the conversation, somebody inquiring about a children's show, that they wouldn't be reasonably local to me. And it kind of pointed up to me the fact that internet inquiries, while it's great because almost anybody from anywhere can get your information, what's not so clever is that if they don't realise where you are, even though the address is on the website, but if they don't realise where you are and that it might not be practical for you to come and do a show for them, I think it's slightly different with close-up. I mean, I do go to London occasionally to do a large close-up gig, but then the fees are so much higher, it's still worth my while to do it. Whereas for a children's show, it really isn't, and people are better off getting somebody local. But it was just a surprise in her voice when I said, well, I'm in Devon. And she said, what? So it was quite funny, really. Just goes to show you, though, the power of the internet, eh? I must admit, at the end of every year, in December, I find myself looking back over the 12 months and just kind of reflecting on how things have been. Has it been a good year or not? I wonder whether you do this. How has, for instance, particularly with shows, how has that been for you this year? I've had actually quite a good year. I've had a better year than I had last year. And I had a very good year sort of 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm back to that sort of level of income and show take-up again. Now, whether this is to do with the economy sort of slowly but surely improving, or whether people have just reaching a sod it factor, you think, well, I haven't really got the money, I'll sod it, we'll do it anyway. I'm not altogether sure. And of course, there are variables which you can't really control. You know what it's like. Sometimes you get inquiries, several inquiries for one particular date. You can only take perhaps one of those bookings, maybe two if you're lucky on the timings, but you can't do the rest. And that's very frustrating when you have to turn work away or pass it on to a colleague, because if it was only one day earlier or one day later, you may well have been able to do it. So that can sometimes skew the figures a little bit, because you can have a run of bad fortune in that sense, and therefore lose out on a number of shows you might otherwise have got. But as a general rule, and this is interesting to me because over the last 12 months, I've gradually been putting my show price up. So it's not because I've reduced my prices to get more bookings, because I chase profit, not turnover. So it's interesting that I've actually had more bookings this year and therefore made more money out of the shows, which is great. And next year, I've already got several bookings in for next year and even for the year after. I've got a couple for 2016 already as well. So I'm feeling sort of fairly optimistic that the upturn that I've seen in 2014 will hopefully continue into 2015. So how's it been for you? Have you had a thought, think about how it's been this year? Do you keep records of it so that you can look from 1 year to the next? Because I noticed that if I look back up old diaries, when I say old, you know, 15 years ago, for some reason I keep them. I don't know why I do this, but I come across them sometimes. I stick them in a cupboard and I see the number of shows that I did. I realise that although I do less shows over a 12-month period than I used to, because most of what I'm doing is close-up and the fees are better, then of course obviously it means that I'm actually making a better income from it, which is why I'm going the way that I am. But it's interesting to look back and compare 1 year to the next, and if things haven't been so good, perhaps analyse why, and if they have, keep doing what you've been doing. Well, that's it for another podcast. I'd like to wish you a very happy Christmas. I hope you have a great festive period. And if you are doing shows, hope they all go well. And I look forward to being back here again with another podcast in January.